This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's important to talk about how insane being normal looks once you get used to being insane. We'll talk about that tonight when it comes to deportations, dealing with foreign countries. Celebrities are no longer losing their minds and moving the needle. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's talk about sanity. Insanity, nations, leaders, the things we want. Because as of right now, things are going very, very well, to put it mildly, under the Trump administration. Deportations are happening. We'll get to what happened with Colombia in a few and in the foreign countries. But before we get to that, let's just talk about something, because there's something we're all probably guilty of to some degree. I know I am. We're all products of our environment, are we not? Of the society we live in, of the people who surround us, not just on a macro level, just on a local level. We're products of our parents, of our friends, family. It's the way it is. And so there can, in the human mind, you can get to this place where you accept something as being normal that is in no way at all normal or okay. And this is part of how human beings stay sane, right? Because if you're locked up in prison or something horrible, your mind has to adjust to that new normal. Otherwise, you'd freaking lose your mind. You'd go insane. So let's talk about where we are here as a country. More specifically, where we have been. Right now, the Trump administration, they are moving forward with deportations. We'll go ahead and call them mass deportations. Tom Homan continues his press offensive as they go through this, and he's making it pretty clear they're not going to stop.
I want to go back to those military flights going south. We, as you said, we have never seen that before. Is that going to be a constant commitment from the U.S. military every single day to take deportees out?
Yes.
So is this what we will see every single day? Day ending in what the president has promised is millions and millions being deported.
Yes, but you can see the numbers steadily increase, the number of arrests nationwide as we open up the aperture.
The estimates of perhaps those who have been convicted or arrested in the past, 700,000 to over a million. So after you do that, then you go after everybody who is there illegally.
If you're in the country illegally, you're on the table.
Now, that clip, you've probably already seen it. It's been making the rounds. Whoa, my gosh, what a change. Most people like me, like you, were celebrating it. Yes, thank goodness. What a change. Things are different. And, of course, you'll see in a lot of left-wing and more weenie moderate circles, well, is this too far? I don't know. Is this going too far? But let's just pause on that for a moment before we get to what happened with Colombia over the weekend. Deporting people who are in your country illegally is not supposed to be a Republican thing or Democrat thing. That's kind of the thing. That's part of leading a country. That's part of protecting a nation. I know we've gotten to this place where we just have accepted that Democrats are a bunch of soulless open borders demons and Republicans are kind of too weak to do it, but you realize both those things are horrible and should not be accepted. Deporting everyone in your country illegally is like the norm, or it should be the norm historically. But we have existed in a system for so long where Democrats to the extreme, and Republicans less so, but still guilty of this, have simply viewed the United States of America as the world's open sewer for different reasons, right? Most of the Democrats are simply evil, soulless demons who want to burn the country to the ground. But some of them actually may actually believe they're doing, well, we're trying to be nice to the poor migrants. Of course, they have to call them migrants. And Republicans, oftentimes just as soulless and evil and wrong. Well, I mean, we could deport the people and secure the border, but we want those Chamber of Commerce dollars coming in. We need the cheap dishwashers. So they do the exact same thing. But the normal state of affairs for your country and for my country should be deport illegals. Now, I love that it's happening right now, and I applaud Trump, I applaud Holman, I applaud all of them, but we shouldn't be in a place where we should applaud deportations of illegals. That should be the permanent state of affairs. And that brings me to what happened with Colombia over the weekend. Speaking of being the world's open sewer, the world knows, has known for quite some time, this of course accelerates whenever you elect demonic Democrats, the world knows that you can take the worst people in your society, the dregs of your society, and you can just kind of drop them off in America. And think about, just pause for a moment, because think about this. If you're a leader of a nation, whatever that nation may be, we'll look at it like Colombia right now. When you're Colombia, you're not America. Most countries have limits on finances and resources and things like that. When you're Colombia and you're looking at, gosh, we have all these criminals. It's not good. We don't want them here, murdering people, stealing things, raping things. That's bad. And it's costly. You need extra cops to get that in line. It's costly. Imprisoning them, it's costly. But more than just the outright violent criminals, the poor, gosh, you don't want to have to take care of them. These welfare programs. Wait a minute. America just elected a Democrat. Let's round them up and get them out of here. Send them over to America. Well, what you're doing is you're unburdening the budget, the resources of your country. Imagine if every social setting you could get in, that you could find yourself in, where you could take the bottom 5% of losers in that setting and shove them out the door, how much better it would be. Because it's always the bottom 5% ruins it for everybody. Well, the world, not just Colombia, has just gotten used to, well, that's what we do. Oh, got a bunch of people, send them to America. Oh, Joe Biden got elected? Probably, that loser probably gave him an app where they can get in, and of course he did. And so this has been the permanent state of affairs for the world for as long as I've really been alive. Republican and Democrat, of course, Democrats are worse, but I'll just send them to America. Well, Trump came out over the weekend, starts sending people back. Colombia's president says no. And he refuses two flights of his own people coming back. Now, again, this goes to, was the Trump response right wing, too far, or what should be the norm? Trump said, excuse me? You're refusing your own people coming back? Okay, I tell you what, here's some tariffs, and we're going to shatter your country economically if you refuse to take your people back. In fact, we're going to increase the tariffs if this continues. And I'm not even making this up for television. I think it was like 2 hours. It was within 2 hours, Colombia announces, oh, by the way, we're sending the plane to get our people back. We want them to come back nicely. Thank you, President Trump. I appreciate you very much. And everyone's praising Trump. And honestly, he deserves all the credit in the world and praise, but that's how your president should always act. Even if you have policy disagreements with your president, Republican, Democrat, whatever, because he's the American president, that's how he should conduct himself at all times. But because we have for so long suffered under presidents who believe America should be the world's open sewer, we look at one that actually fights for us and we think to ourselves, whoa! This is wild. I've never seen anything like it. And you know what that really is? That's an indictment on all the ones that came before him. That's really what that is. Trump went to the World Economic Forum and spoke like this, and we all celebrated it. I did too, but this is how your president should talk.
America is back and open for business. One thing we're going to be demanding is we're going to be demanding respect from other nations. We just want to be treated fairly with other nations because there's hardly a nation in the world. And I blame this on us, and I blame it on politicians that, for some reason, I'm probably mostly it's stupidity, but you could also say other reasons, but mostly stupidity. They've allowed other nations to take advantage of the U.S., and we can't allow that to happen anymore.
It's treated as radical. That's crazy! That's how your president should speak about you, no matter his party affiliation. It's crazy that what we're seeing right now is considered crazy. That's what's nuts. And of course, it doesn't hurt to juxtapose that with what just left. Remember, this is what happens now every time America makes the horrible mistake of electing an America-hating Democrat. They go overseas and they apologize for you.
We immediately rejoined the Paris Agreement. We convened major climate summits and reestablished. I apologize we ever pulled out of the agreement.
I apologize. American presidents going on foreign soil to apologize. That's why I came out over the weekend. $15 million of your money went to the Taliban to distribute, and I quote, oral contraceptives, $420 million in DEI programs cut from the government. That was, of course, your money. Democrats get elected and just simply pillage this country, and they invite the entire world to do the same. It's freaking evil, it's wrong, and at least for 4 years, let's thank God that it stopped, or at least paused. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Tyler O'Neill joins us next, has a lot of things on his mind. Before Tyler does that, I had a doctor's appointment today, just a physical, nothing to worry about. He was looking at my numbers. He was impressed, not to brag. And he said, what kind of sleep you get? I bet you get good sleep. And I said, oh my gosh, doc, have you heard of Dream Pounder from Beam? And he said, no. And I told him, no drugs, doc, sorry, no pills. Just a cup of hot chocolate, only it's got melatonin and natural things in it that'll just have you drifting off to a peaceful sleep and waking up feeling great every single day. And you sleep well every night, your entire life, even your blood work gets better. Get some Dream Powder in your life. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Who's really in control in Washington? How can the President of the United States, someone who wields immense power, be pressured to step aside? This summer, Americans across the country learned that the real power in Washington does not reside in the Oval Office. That nice constitution you learned about in school, with its nifty checks and balances, that one that tells you how the government works, that's a lie. Instead, a far-left network of donors props up a system of woke nonprofits that infiltrate and advise the federal government, sometimes in direct opposition to the president. I call this governing behemoth the Woketopus.
I'm unreasonably excited for this book and this interview because this is a subject, as you know, we talk about so much. You think so much of what you see on television and the animals in the streets and things like that, that it's somehow organic. It is funded and it is organized and it is a dark universe when you start wading through it. So Tyler O'Neill waded through it for us. He's the managing editor for the Daily Signal. And of course, he wrote this book, Woketopus. Tyler, give us an overview to start out. This dark money cabal, what is it? Who is it?
Yeah, thanks, Jesse. So I think many Americans know a little bit about this. They've heard the name George Soros. Most people probably don't know that George Soros isn't the guy calling the shots at Open Society Foundations anymore. It's his son, Alex. But then there's also this broader network called Arabella Advisors. They're a for-profit company that have a bunch of nonprofit tentacles that have offshoot from them. So what I found, you know, I was scratching beneath the surface because I decided to write this book. I've been following an organization called the Southern Poverty Law Center, which I think is the tip of the spear when it comes to demonizing conservatives and Christians in the legacy media, in government, in big tech. And this organization had a surprising amount of access in the Biden White House. And so I started asking, if this organization had access, what other far-left organizations had access? And as I started to do some digging, I realized that there was a vast network of far-left activist groups that are propped up by donors like George and Alex Soros, or by Eric Kessler and his Arabella Advisors nonprofits. And they have dark money funding schemes where they set things up to hide. Specifically, you know, there's dark money and then there's dark, dark, dark money. Arabella Advisors is the latter. They're a for-profit company that sets up a bunch of nonprofits that then fund fiscal sponsorships. And then those fiscal sponsorships are where the actual work happens. So you get a donor who will want to give to an organization or want to do something, like, for instance, stop one of President Trump's Supreme Court nominees. He'll give money to one of these Arabella nonprofits. The Arabella nonprofit will then take that money and give it to an organization like Demand Justice, which is essentially just an arm of that Arabella nonprofit. Now it's a separate nonprofit, but back when it was fighting Trump's Supreme Court nominees in 2017, it was part of, I think it was New Venture Fund. And so the donors can hide exactly where their money goes. And then when Demand Justice was found, when a journalist named Gabe Kaminsky decided to ask them for their money sources, they accidentally sent him a document revealing that they only had two donors. And of course, the founder of the organization suddenly was like, oh no, don't you dare share this. If you do, I'm going to get fired. And clearly, I'm not good at fundraising and all these things. Meanwhile, this group, Demand Justice, was demanding transparency from Supreme Court justices and Supreme Court nominees, even while it fled from transparency itself. So that's what you see on the left with this dark money apparatus. And I found that these dark money foundations were bankrolling leftist groups across the spectrum, groups that had tremendous impact in the Biden administration.
Okay, there's so much I could go into with you here, Tyler, but let's focus on that for the time being. You mentioned in the beginning they had access to the president, like the SPLC, Southern Poverty Law Center, they had access to the president. What does that mean? Are they lunching every Monday? Are they the lobbying? What does that mean?
Yes, so many of these organizations have had a lot of meetings at the White House. And for them to qualify, in my understanding of the woketopus, they have to have had meetings at the White House, they have to have some impact on federal policy. And in the case of the Southern Poverty Law Center, the president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Margaret Wong, claimed, and I see evidence that she's probably telling the truth, that as soon as Biden entered the White House, he had parts of his administration going to the Southern Poverty Law Center, asking them for advice on how to combat the domestic terrorism threat. This is an organization that shouldn't be trusted on domestic terrorism at all. But of course, one of the other big things that happened, not only did the FBI cite the SPLC on its notorious anti-Catholic memo, which of course, thankfully, they later withdrew and said didn't meet their standards. Huh, I wonder why. But they cited them there. And then President Biden nominated an SPLC attorney by the name of Nancy Abudu to a top federal judgeship, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and she got confirmed. Now, that influence is bad enough, but when you look at organizations like the National Education Association, the American Federation of Teachers, the presidents of those two groups were with President Biden and, well, then president. Thank God he's no longer president. Then President Biden and the First Lady at the White House on the first full day of his administration. So the woketopus overall, they have different, each of these organizations have different levels of access, but all of them have access, and some of them had the ability to really call the shots. I mean, we saw last year when the Biden White House released a statement suggesting they were backing away from supporting transgender surgeries for children, for minors, immediately the Human Rights Campaign got their people together and started calling and bombarding the White House saying, no, you can't do this. You need to change your message. And a few hours after the White House's message was first published, there was a correction, and the White House reached out and changed their message to weaken their change. And so they started, you know, immediately after they changed their message, the Human Rights Campaign president sent an email to all the members of the Human Rights Campaign saying, thank you, this is our impact. Thank you for pressuring the White House to change its message here. And so these are the levels. It sometimes is exposed in black and white. It's sometimes a little bit harder to gauge exactly how much influence they had. But in each of the cases I lay out in the book, there's a clear connection between either the staff of a left-wing organization and the administrative state, or that interaction with the White House.
Tyler, could you, as best you can, because you wrote the book and this is a subject I'm fanatical about, can you explain the power dynamics to me? Like, for instance, the Human Rights Campaign, one of the most soulless commie organizations out there. They make a phone call, they rally the troops, you get the White House, the president, or whoever was holding him up at the time, you get them to reverse a policy platform of some kind. That's big boy power. So why, if you're Joe Biden and you know the tranny stuff, especially tranny with kids stuff's unpopular, why wouldn't you just tell them, no, go pound sand? What consequences come towards the president if he does that?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. I don't fully have the answer to that, but I do know that the Human Rights Campaign, it's what I call the LGBTQ mafia. And what they do, you know, you've probably covered this a great deal. They have a corporate equality index. They have other indexes where they say, if you're a company and you don't toe the line on everything they want, then you get a bad rating. And then when venture capitalists who use environmental, social, and governance goals to invest, that's the ESG movement, when they look at companies to invest in, they say, no, I'm not going to invest there if they have a poor score on the Human Rights Campaign's index. Thankfully, in the past year, the Human Rights Campaign has already lost a great deal of steam with a lot of companies exiting the index. And in fact, last week, Target announced that they would even exit the index, which is a huge win for, you know, free markets, for the ability of American consumers to not be forced to accept this woke agenda just when they go shopping. But the problem is these groups still have a tremendous impact. And part of the impact that the Human Rights Campaign has, it's this big donor cabal. You know, you have your Alex Soros's, your George Soros's. The money that they're funding to these activist groups keeps them in business and keeps them pushing the leftist narrative. Then you have the fact that the Human Rights Campaign was taken seriously by a lot of activists in the ESG movement. And so they have influence there. And then by the time it gets to somebody like President Biden, and of course, President Biden, Vice President Harris, they went and spoke at many Human Rights Campaign events. They're very closely tied to these people. I do believe that to some degree, Biden, you know, started to support some of this radical stuff. But it is interesting to know who exactly was pulling the strings there, because Biden is an old school Democrat. I think he's trying to navigate and find where the middle of his Democratic Party was when he was president. And these loud voices from activist groups like the Human Rights Campaign are pushing him, giving him a false sense of where the American people are, and even where a lot of Democrats are on these issues.
Who funded the open border?
Oh, gosh. Well, so it's a little complicated, but I can say for certain that the left's dark money network propped up organizations like the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the Center for American Progress. And they sent millions of dollars to these organizations. So you have George Soros, Open Society Foundations. You have nonprofits created by the Arabella Advisors for-profit company. And you have groups like the Tides Foundation, where they're directing this money to organizations that called on Biden to change the way that the government works. And so the main thing with the open border was, and I think this is almost plain as day, the Center for American Progress and the ACLU released documents where they said what we need to do from the government, what we need to see, is the Department of Homeland Security changing from treating immigration as a crime to be enforced against and start treating it as an asset to be managed. And this is exactly the sort of language, the sort of idea that led to Biden's open border policies, that led him to change all of the structures that Trump had in place and just open the border full hog, have, you know, catch and release instead of actually detaining people, which the law clearly states, to get rid of the safe third country deals, to get rid of remain in Mexico. And a lot of that came from the strategies that they were developing in the Biden transition, where you had staff with these left-wing groups in the Biden transition, in the leadership for DHS, implementing this idea through the federal government. And so step by step, as Biden is about to enter office, you see this left-wing influence campaign saying, we need to change the way we deal with immigration, and we essentially need to, you know, treat these people, give them the welcome mat instead of enforcing our laws, enforcing our borders. And that mentality is what animated Biden's policy. So even though, you know, it's not one-to-one, I can't say George Soros is exactly responsible for the open border, but his funding network and the other organizations connected with it and that often fund these same groups were bankrolling activists who pushed Biden in this direction, and he went in this direction. And now, thank God, we have these policies largely reversed. But these activist groups aren't giving up. I mean, right now, the American Civil Liberties Union is filing lawsuits, gearing up to file lawsuits to prevent Trump from carrying out his mass deportations of illegal aliens. And, you know, the Center for American Progress is also gearing up to oppose this. And we also still have a lot of federal bureaucrats from within these agencies who don't support what Trump is doing. And I saw this crazy poll. I think it was really revealing. 64% of Washington, D.C.-based federal employees who voted for Kamala Harris in the last election said they would not implement a lawful Trump order if they thought it was bad policy.
Jeez. Tyler O'Neill, that was outstanding. You come back soon. Go buy that book, Woketopus. I'm so fascinated by all this. Thank you for writing it. Woketopus. Go pick that bad boy up. Told you. It's all paid for. All of it. Nothing real. Everything is fake. Except for Pure Talk. That's real. And the savings are real. Did you realize that? Save a bunch of money when you switch to Pure Talk. That's definitely real. You'll know the first time you get your bill, oh, well, Pure Talk's for real. Because you're paying way too much at Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile. And on top of that, you know, we just talked about all that DEI, ESG stuff. Go look up your cell phone company and see what they do with your money. That left-wing funding network we just heard about? Ooh, scary, right? Who funds that? You do. I have. I had Verizon before. AT&T, T-Mobile, corporate America is knee-deep involved in funding that crap. So stop doing that. Switch to Pure Talk. It's fast. It's easy. With a qualifying plan, you get a free phone right now. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, there's been a heaping helping of winning for the last week, that is for sure. And we should not at all forget about the wonderful men and women in the military, especially those kicked out who are getting some semblance of justice right now because of the dumpage of the vaccine mandate, getting people reinstated. We're dumping the tranny madness. Joining me now, a couple ladies from the wonderful Independent Women's Forum, Andrea Mew, managing editor, and Beth Parlato, senior legal advisor. Beth, let's start there. You were one of the ones all over these vaccine mandates very early on. Credit to you. I guess I'll just hand it over and let you spike the football.
Sure. Well, Trump is keeping his promises to eradicate radical gender ideology, not only from the federal government, from the military. And I commend him for that. The military is no place for experiments. And it's essential that our service men and women, that they have the strength and the physical abilities to actually meet the rigorous requirements to be in our military. And I really think that these executive orders today, they actually highlight the hypocrisy of this woke radical ideology. We have service members who are actually being encouraged to take experimental cross-sex hormones and other procedures and surgeries, and that's okay, and they're allowed in our military. Yet, as you mentioned in your opening, we have thousands of military members who have been discharged because they refused to take the experimental COVID jab. So I think that these executive orders are righting the wrongs from the past administration, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
Beth, what do you make of this DEI chainsaw Trump is bringing to the place? And I mean the whole place, military top to bottom, $420 million in cuts, just dumping all these dirty commies onto the street. I think it's glorious.
It is glorious. I love that use of the word. It's glorious. We have a new day. I am looking so forward to the next 4 years. DEI has no place in America, period. We are a country that needs to have our businesses, our federal government, our state government, private entities, no matter what, across the board, it needs to be based on merit and it needs to be based on our qualifications. So DEI has no place, and Trump is throwing it out the door, and we here at Independent Women could not be happier.
Andrea, talk to me about the nutty stuff they're still teaching in schools. Because right now we're all patting ourselves on the back. We're getting rid of all the DEI crap, and this is going to go and that's going to go. But locally, we still have so many of these apparatchiks running the school system.
Right, Jesse. You know, this all starts from the top down, but it's up to every single individual state and every single individual school board to make reforms based on Trump's executive orders. So Trump's executive orders are incredible. And at Independent Women, we are so proud of all of the progress that he's been making this past week. But, you know, we can't really change things unless each individual state, city, county, whatever you have it, makes the same changes that he's making. You know, growing up in ultra-liberal California, I'm very used to progressive ideology being ramped into each student's brain. It was ramped into mine. I was growing up a Democrat by default. I would say almost every single one of my high school friends ended up identifying as transgender. All of my female friends who I was in high school with, all of my closest female friends, are now on testosterone. And Jesse, it's a little bit awkward to admit it, but my high school ex-boyfriend now uses female pronouns, has a female name, and even has breasts.
Oh, God, good God. How'd you come out of that okay? You look like you fared well.
You know, I underwent a very strong political transformation. I credit it to having an open mind and actually trying to have a dialogue with the other side, where I realized everything that I had learned was actually wrong. And, you know, it helped to have stories that I could put faces to concepts. And that's what really interested me in my work at Independent Woman. It's what really encouraged me to get started with Independent Woman, where my colleague Kelsey Bolar was telling the stories of detransitioners. And that topic really hit hard to me because I knew so many people who were identifying as transgender and undergoing medicalization. When I started to understand how it can be changed from a policy standpoint, that's what really intrigued me with my work with Independent Women, and now as managing editor for IW Features.
How about that? Yeah, I remember we had Kelsey on to talk about that. It was fascinating and freaking horrifying. Beth, all this crap they do to kids at the local level, this seems to be your particular area of expertise. Is it illegal? And I know it's unethical, and I know it's insane, and I know it's damaging, and I get all that, but are there legal ways we can stop a local jurisdiction in California, where all Andrea's friends went crazy tranny? Can we stop them from doing that?
Yeah. Well, I could kind of bounce off of Andrea. What she was saying is, I'm admitted to practice in New York. So I've been a New York attorney for nearly 32 years. And so I've seen it, I fought it, and I have fought it all the way from the school boards all the way into the Supreme Court in the appellate division. It's very difficult to be able to stop this locally and statewide until the states get on board. So what President Trump just did on day one of his administration is he signed that executive order that he said that the policy of the United States is to recognize two sexes, male and female. And he defined male and female. And he also said that it does not include gender identity, that sex is not a synonym. We applaud that executive order. It is brilliantly drafted. But the issue with that, it's not an issue, but the problem is it only applies to the federal government, applies to the regulations and the policies within the federal government. So we need the states to get on board. The states have got to step up to the plate. They have got to pass sex-based legislation. We had eight states last year in 2024 pass sex-based legislation. This year, Independent Women is now working with 14 additional states. That's basically all I've been doing since January 1st. And so we are encouraged. We are going to do all we can to be able to get legislation passed in the state level. This week alone, I'm testifying in two different states within their legislatures to support sex-based legislation. But it has to get passed at the state level to be able to stop this. And, you know, it's permeated our entire lives, not only in the schools, but it's also in, you know, everything that we do. It's part of our culture. It's in society. It's in our laws. It's in our regulations. And thank God that Trump is stopping this in its tracks within the federal government. But the states also have to pass sex-based legislation to be able to keep boys out of girls' sports and to be able to keep boys out of women's private spaces.
Andrea, Beth, appreciate you both very much. All right. Speaking of all, well, LGBTQ issues and whatnot, Steve Dace is going to join us next to talk about Lindsey Graham. Hang on.
Do you believe that President Trump was wrong to issue these blanket pardons to the January 6th defendants?
Number one, he had the legal authority to do it, but I fear that you will get more violence. Pardoning the people who went into the Capitol and beat up a police officer violently, I think was a mistake because it seems to suggest that's an okay thing to do.
Lindsey Graham thinks it's a mistake. And that's so funny because Lindsey Graham is from Blood Red, South Carolina. And one of the reasons Lindsey Graham is still in his seat is because Donald Trump has run cover for that man constantly. He'll bring him up on stage and the crowd boos, "Oh, Lindsey." And then Trump says, "No, no, he's my guy." And so Trump pardons a bunch of guys and Lindsey comes out and knifes him right in the back. It's an interesting little planet we live in. Joining me now, Steve Dace of the great Steve Dace Show. Steve, Lindsey's not comfortable with the pardons.
Really gay. I mean, the take, Jesse, just the take is just another gay take by Lindsey Graham, who should have been taken out politically many a moon ago, but you're right. He has managed his way to survive, to parasitically attach himself to Trump. But this might be a bridge too far, particularly for this iteration of Trump that we're seeing now, Jess. I mean, this is the Trump many on the right long hoped for and the left was long fearful of. So, I mean, while we're out there settling scores, I think it might be time to send old Lindsey out to pasture.
Let's talk about sending Lindsey out to pasture because he's up in 2026. In fact, 2026 really seems to be our year. We have John Cornyn types and others mm-hmm. who are up for re-election. And this has been traditionally where the GOP primary voter has pooped his pants and then sat in it for days on end. We don't show up to Republican primaries. And if we do, about 75-80% of the people who do show up vote for the same scumbag loser who's been there screwing them over time and time again. You mentioned Trump has changed, and I certainly have witnessed that change. Has the GOP primary voter changed? Because that really is our problem.
Agreed. But I think a lot of that is generational. And I say this is a guy that has a lot of sleepless nights, PTSD, scars, and bitterness from participating in a lot of GOP primaries in my home state of Iowa and around the country. And the reality is, if the same 70-year-old Fox News viewer is the same person that votes in all the primaries, then you're going to get all the same candidates. That is absolutely correct. But we have a new dynamic here in Trump. Our people have really placed an inordinate amount of hope and faith into Trump to deliver for them. And this first week has been a feeling of deliverance, frankly. Okay. And so I think he does have the cachet now, to pardon my French, Trump the GOP primary voter, to do a Thanos type of a snap and dust, metaphorically speaking, a lot of these GOP hacks in primaries by signaling that they're not loyal, they're not helpful with his agenda, they're getting in the way of him making America great again. And so I do not trust the GOP primary voter one iota, but I do trust in the amount of trust they have in Trump. If Trump acts, we could take numerous of these Republican senators out. If he doesn't, we're not going to be able to touch any of them. I mean, the reality is nothing good in the Republican Party will happen without the direct involvement of Donald Trump, because the Republican Party and Republican Republican Party primary voters have not changed.
Okay, so do we have any indication of which way Trump is leaning? Because to be completely fair and nice as humanly possible, historically, he has been embarrassing to the point of disastrous when it comes to primary endorsements. He endorses, I mean, I don't even know what thought process goes into half of this. He endorses guys who screw over his own agenda. Or do we have a different Trump now when it comes to endorsements?
Well, I do think amplifying personal grievances like this, like Lindsey Graham opened that front up, would be strategically beneficial. But I think the real test here for Trump, I mean, the amount of political calculation that is going on here. I mean, really, the first time he ran, the calculation was who said nice things to me and was loyal to me. There is a level of stratagem and nuance happening here. We're actually playing chess. I don't know if we've gotten to 4D chess yet, but we are playing chess here. And so I think for Trump, this is going to be a calculus, which is if we lose this next midterm election, his presidency is effectively over, Jesse. Except for what he will be able to do with foreign policy, which is still has a lot of sweeping power. But on a day-to-day basis, his ability to radically transform the country back to some form of normalcy will be mortally wounded. And between not being able to run again, he'll be a lame. And he knows this. I think this is why they're rolling out so aggressively this very first year, this very first week even, that if we do poorly in this next midterm, much of the hope that we have in his presidency is over the first Wednesday in November of 2026. And so the calculus here is, okay, Lindsey Graham sucks. All right. Everybody recognizes this. But if I can get him to vote for Pete Hegseth and this and that, and then I'll put up with it unless we're going to nominate someone who then can't even win a general election. Now, that's not a worry in a state like South Carolina, where a yellow dog gets elected if they're a Republican, but it could be a worry in some other states as well. And so are there capable quality candidates that could replace these kinds of figures? Again, in South Carolina or Texas with John Cornyn, those aren't as big a worries, where Democrats have very tough sledding statewide to win. But there could be some other places where, like my home state of Iowa with a Joni Ernst, for example, where she's terrible, yes, but you can't risk losing the seat outright to a Democrat either.
Yeah, that would suck. Gosh, I can't stand Joni Ernst. Fauci, real
That's
quick.
That's two
here,
of us.
Steve. Fauci, yeah. Fauci got his pardon. It leaves, honestly, I can't believe how many emails I'm still getting about this. This Fauci pardon just sticks under people's saddle real bad, man. It's driving them crazy.
Well, here's the good news of this. This, given who the Republican Party is, it is far more likely now, Jesse, that they will push for the real truth of what happened here and what was done to us without having to act on it, than it would if he was not under any form of legal protection. Because that's most Republicans are closer to Lindsey Graham than Donald Trump, frankly. And so the idea of exposing something without having to do something about it is like fetishized in the Republican Party. So we might actually get more answers now. There's nothing to hold him back from testifying now under oath. He could be found in contempt of court regardless of a pardon. If he doesn't show, there would be a criminal liability there. There would be criminal liability for perjuring himself. And so if we're looking for a silver lining here, he is now completely invulnerable, which makes him therefore vulnerable. There's no reason for him to come forward and tell the truth. There's no reason for Republicans not to truly expose the depths of his depravity here, because they have an excuse with his pardon. They don't have to act on it. They can just turn it into fodder for shows like yours and mine.
Well, fingers crossed for that. For me, mostly, I'm not really worried about anything else. Steve, as always, thank you, brother. I appreciate you. We're not done. Stop lighting the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. And you know what lightens my mood? The change in mentality on the right in America. Because, look, some hysterical commie woman crying on television or Instagram, I'm so sad about Lupe. That's not exactly something new. That's how they've done, that's how they've done business since the old camera came out on the phone. But what is new is the American people rejecting it. Selena Gomez came out, and she had this to say about the poor immigrants.
I just wanted to say that I'm so sorry. All my people are getting attacked. The children. They don't understand. I'm so sorry. I wish I could do something, but I can't. I don't know what to do. I'll try everything, I promise.
You know what makes me proud? You know why that's on Light in the Mood? Because previously, she would have been invited on every single news channel to talk about that, and she may still get to go on a couple, but you know what happened this time? She had to go to her account and delete the video because of the abuse the American people heaped on that dirty communist. We're done letting hysterical women run the country. No more. Good for us. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty on Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.